Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
Liz Shuler talks tough to keep workers safe from COVID. Question, why doesn't the Supreme Court want workers to be as safe as they are? And today on the show, Ironworkers Local 167 and the stagehands in Indiana. Welcome to the Wednesday, January 12th edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on six platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and Stitcher. James Cole is going to be our first guest on the show today, and he comes to us from Ironworkers Local 167. They're located in Memphis, Tennessee, and they have been building bridges, buildings, schools, factories, power plants, hospitals, stadiums, and other structures in the tri-states area of West Tennessee, East Arkansas, and Northern Mississippi. And they've been doing this for over 100 years. James is the business manager. We'll talk about ironworkers as a trade, jobs from this year until 2028. And I want to tell you, it is booming down there. Ford is to build the largest car manufacturing plant in North America in West Tennessee. Let me repeat that. Ford, legendary Ford Motor Company, is going to build the largest car manufacturing plant in North America, and they need some help. They need a lot of skilled workers, and Jim Cole is of the opinion they'll need at least 600 iron workers. And think about the other allied trades, building that plant, maintaining that plant. So we're going to talk about that, and what they're doing on a national basis to attract people to the iron workers trade in that area because of the very, very bright outlook for the future of employment. So we're looking at a stretch from now until at least 2028. It may go to 2030. That's a chunk of time and can make a whole lot of dough as an iron worker. No doubt about that. Later in the show, we're going to check in with Mike Pope. And Mike Pope is coming to us from IATSE in Indiana. He's got over 40 years of experience in broadcast television from April of 79 to August of 89. He was a staff production technician at WTTV in Indianapolis. And when he was there, he worked a wide variety of technical positions. In 89, he left to pursue a freelance career in sports TV. And now he works as an audio mixer for a variety of sports, but mostly basketball and auto racing. His favorites, he says, are IndyCar and the Indianapolis Pacers. So he'll talk about his job, the benefits, especially insurance, and the fact that IATSE maintained members' insurance through COVID lockdowns. That's huge. That's huge. So many workers were left out in the cold. But when you got a union, they help you out as much as they can. We'll talk about having contracts, helping with employer relations. And at the local level, why it's important to take care of their members. Website is IATSELocal317.com. IATSELocal317.com. They're also on Twitter at IATSE. That's the national website. So Mike Pope will be joining us later in the show. We had a record day yesterday for the coronavirus. 1.4 million people testing positive. That's three times the daily average. That's right. Because every day it's been about a half million. And this has prompted a comment from Liz Shuler, president of the AFL-CIO. And she said, with all these people testing positive, it's important that as we begin the third year of this pandemic, we must remain vigilant. Employers have a responsibility to ensure that our workplaces are safe by taking a multi-layered approach to prevent infections at work. And that is why the AFL-CIO joined with our affiliates and other unions that represent healthcare workers to file a lawsuit. This was last week. Against the Occupational Safety and Health Administration. We talked about this on the show, and I was like, wait a minute. Labor filing suit against OSHA? I mean, your partners. What's going on here? Well, they're not doing their job. Liz said, we're fighting for a permanent safety standard for healthcare workers and continue to fight for stronger, enforceable COVID-19 protections for all workers. And we will not let up until all working people are safe on the job. Liz Shuler, president of the AFL-CIO. Well, last Friday, the Supreme Court heard oral arguments in a consolidated set of cases challenging OSHA's shot or test mandate for large employers. By large, I mean 100 or more. And the questioning kind of exposed a couple of the justices. For one, John Roberts, the Chief Justice, and he pretty much was skeptical about the Biden rule, seeming to suggest that it should be a federal rather than state responsibility, saying it's a little hard to accept the idea that any single federal agency should call for vaccination since several agencies are involved. In response, the Solicitor General argued that although threats arriving from COVID-19 exist in many different contexts, that does not prohibit OSHA from regulating the hazard. A line of argumentation that did not seem convincing to Roberts. Well, in any event, OSHA's rule, as it stands, was supposed to be implemented this week, actually on Monday, barring action from the Supreme Court, though the agency had said it will not issue citations against employers who are in good faith attempting to comply with testing regulations, at least until February 9th. So we're kind of in limbo right now. But I want to call attention to an article Ellie Mistel wrote for The Nation, and we do a segment on the show with The Nation magazine. It's on the third Thursday of every month. Ellie's been on the show. He is the justice correspondent for The Nation. He covers the courts, criminal justice system, and politics. And he had a really good observation on all this. He said all the Supreme Court justices are vaccinated. The court, moreover, was an early adopter of remote working to keep justices safe. And even as they've gone back to the court in person, they still require COVID testing of those who will argue in front of them. So Ellie says it would seem the nine people who can be removed from power only in death are taking the best available precautions to stay alive. While the conservative justices are willing to protect themselves from getting sick at work, however, they are unwilling to extend those protections to the American worker. He talks about the cases that were heard on Friday and goes on to say, I've said many times that it would be flatly unconstitutional for the government to force people to put something into their bodies against their will. Now, that would be a violation of their Fourth Amendment rights. Now, nobody is talking about forced vaccinations by a government agency. And anybody who says that what Biden is doing is either uninformed or more likely purposely spewing misinformation, and we know a lot of that's going on. Instead, the OSHA rule says, quote, vax or get tested and mask or work from home or find a new job. That's pretty specific. So, Ellie writes, it's squarely within the government's authority to set workplace safety regulations. OSHA can and does regulate the air quality in workplaces. It can regulate how much coronavirus a person can spew on their coworkers. But the argument that the government has the authority and responsibility to keep workers safe was not good enough for the conservatives on the court. That's not necessarily because the conservative justices have been infected by the anti-vax strain of stupidity that has taken root in the corners of the country. Again, all the justices are vaccinated. No. The problem for conservatives is the theory that the government can protect the rights of workers. All of the court's conservative justices come from a long Republican tradition of being anti-labor. They do not believe in raising the cost to business owners for such pedestrian reasons as workplace safety. These conservatives have always been against agencies like OSHA and currently believe they have the votes to effectively neuter the executive branch. That's an amazing piece of writing. Again, credit goes to Ellie Mistel. And there's more to the story if you Google The Nation. There's a subscription for it, but it is such a powerful publication, one that's been around since the end of the Civil War. You know, not too many publications can say that. That just shows you how good their writers are. 1865 they started. But the question is, why doesn't the Supreme Court want workers to be as safe from COVID as they are? You might want to ask that to a number of people. Politicians included. All right, we have to break. When we come back, we're going to check in with the iron workers in Memphis, Tennessee.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
Hire union musicians. Call Music Talent of Cleveland at 216-881-1802. Call Music Talent of Cleveland as your dependable source for professional musicians in Northeast Ohio. Union musicians add harmony to weddings, elegance to parties, and uplifting music for all events. Music Talent of Cleveland contracts solo and ensemble musicians as well as bands and orchestras for single engagements. So hire union musicians. Call Music Talent of Cleveland today. 216-881-1802.
America's Workforce Radio is sponsored in part by the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, District Council 6, representing painters, glazers, drywall finishers, and sign and display industry workers. They remind you that belonging to a union is your right as an American.
Buildings, bridges, skyscrapers, and more. Structures that are the face of our cities and towns were built by members of the Ironworkers Union. That's why it's important that our workforce of over 130,000 ironworkers continues to be the safest and best trained in the field. With 154 training centers, we invest over $90 million annually in safety and training. We're growing the next generation of union ironworkers. There are so many reasons to put your trust in our ironworkers and their employers. Learn more about us at ironworkers.org.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And of course, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle is at AWF Union Podcast. AWF Union Podcast. Let's go to line number one. And welcome to the show, James Cole. James is with Ironworkers Local 167. Website is ironworkers167.com. He's located in Memphis, Tennessee. We've been doing a lot with the Ironworkers lately, and rightly so. The Ironworkers are national sponsors of America's Workforce. We appreciate that. We've been checking in with various locals around the country, and today it's 167. James Cole, welcome to the show. How are we doing today, brother?
Yes. Doing good, doing good. Thank you, thank you.
Well, let's get familiar with you, Jim. First generation iron worker. Talk to me about that. How did you get into this line of work?
Man, well, the line of work, didn't know how to spell iron worker. Didn't know it included as one word. My English teacher always said it was two separate words, but fell in love with the welding of the trade. Fell in love with the cranes and the aspect of being able to look back at something, a multi-story structure, a bridge, a hospital, a school, and be able to say that I built that.
Uh-huh.
I put the bones of that structure up.
Yeah. Yeah.
I put everything together. I welded it together. I made it earthquake safe, you know, that type thing. So
right.
Just love everything about the trade and fell in love with it.
So what year are we talking about when you decided to become an iron worker?
Oh, we're talking 1995.
All right.
1995, 1996, out of high school. Got a small touch of welding when I was in high school, and wrote all my English papers on metallurgy. Found something that I I could write about and actually get a grade for something that piqued my interest. I wasn't writing about Shakespeare. I wasn't writing about biology, something like that. But I went into metallurgy and ended up loving the aspect of welding, getting CWI and being a certified welding inspector and educator and teaching at the training center, and just a beautiful thing back in the 90s. Again, guy came up to me and said, there's an operator, and they said the iron workers need help.
Uh-huh.
What does an iron worker do? Well, they weld sometimes. Oh,
yeah.
Well, I want to go sign up for that. So that's where I went.
By the time you decided to start teaching, I mean, how long were you an iron worker when you decided, well, you know what, I can teach this craft to other people?
Almost about 10 years.
Is that right? Okay.
About 10 years. I went through the apprenticeship program here in Memphis at Iron Workers Local 167. But I went through the apprenticeship program, did a three-year apprenticeship program, and came out with as many welding certs and as many certifications as I could, learned the trade. And at the same time I was learning the trade, I was actually going to work and making a living as a young man. And, you know, age 20, you buy your first house, unheard of. You buy your first new car, unheard of. And, you know, in that day and age, and that's kind of where it all fell into. But shortly thereafter, working out in the field, working with, you know, other tradesmen and women out in the field, we're teaching them as we're out in the field how to do things. And I found a sense of accomplishment and pride seeing somebody come in with nothing and leave with something, more or less. You know, you can feed them fish, but it's a lot better to teach them how to fish.
Exactly.
I found that and I loved it. And lo and behold, in 2006, started teaching in the apprenticeship program. And that's all she wrote. I was hooked from that day on, just because of the whole gifting somebody else with what I've been gifted.
That's awesome. So when you were in high school, I mean, you definitely got the bug to become a welder and then eventually an iron worker. Was there any pressure, though? And we talk about this on the show a lot, because you hear so much about kids that go to college. They do their 4 years, 5 years, whatever. They come out, they got a lot of college debt, and they don't have a really good job to pay off that debt. And I'm wondering, was that the situation when you grew up in Memphis, Tennessee? A lot of the people that you went to school with, was it like that?
Same scenario, I believe, across the globe. Had a lot of people, you know, taking these career paths, going to college, doing this. I knew I needed benefits. I needed a retirement, because my father was my father's actually deaf. He can't hear, but he was a postal clerk in the post office, worked there 40 something years. And I saw what he was going to end up getting. So I knew I needed benefits. But yeah, every college or every school at that time, high school wise, it was everybody's going to college. You know, if you didn't go to college, you wasn't anything. Started looking into apprenticeship programs, and that's where I saw that, you know, you can make a decent living. Going into an apprenticeship program and becoming a skilled craftsman with a union, coming out with benefits and something that you can bank on later, that you'll have there for you. You just have to be financially stable with your money and not just spend it as fast as you get it. And I believe the old saying, you try not to learn from your own mistakes, but learn from others.
Right.
That's where I learned. I learned from others making financial mistakes and boo-boos and problems and things of that nature. And I wanted a game plan for my life.
You got your head on pretty well. Well, that you're a business manager. I hope you have your head on straight.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. It was a great career path, and I've moved my way through the program and let the membership. We can look at the definition of union, and we can put it in so many contexts and so many terms, but it's just like a, you know, matrimony of marriage. It's two people joining one, and the union as an organization is multiple people, you know, doing the same thing. after the same goal.
Right.
Same thought, same like mind, things of that nature. So that's, I let my union help me decide where I need to go, where I can better benefit them as a whole. And that's who I work for now, is I work for that, the membership.
Jim, what are we looking at membership? How many members you have in 167?
Membership wise, currently, I mean, obviously through the years of 2008, 2013, 15, our membership has dwindled. Our contractor base has dwindled as well here in the south of Memphis, Tennessee. But right now we're floating about 300 members. That's retirees, honorees, and working members. And want to see that grow. And we have a wonderful opportunity in front of us here in West Tennessee and all of Tennessee, Mississippi, Arkansas, and the surrounding area, that we've got a phenomenal thing coming, and we're ready to see this thing take off and grow and help people make an honest living and get off of any assistance or problems that they're on.
Right. Well, the trades will do that. No, it's a pathway to the middle class. There's no
That's
doubt
right.
about that. You're in Memphis, and I saw this on your website, ironworkers167.com. So you're in Memphis, Tennessee. Now you cover Arkansas, or are these pieces parts? Arkansas, Mississippi, and Missouri? That's a pretty large territory.
So we do about a 200-mile radius around Memphis. Boot Hill, Missouri. We've done some work, a hospital up in Poplar Bluff. A little bit tough to man those kind of jobs out of Memphis. You know, that's an hour and 45 minutes from Memphis. But we do man them through our brother and sister locals. That's the beauty of being a tradesman and part of a union, is you can travel, you can see other things, but you can also have the opportunity to, you know, boom out and make other wages and other benefits in other jurisdictions.
No doubt that is a big, big territory to cover. I'm just wondering here, what's the future look like? And this is kind of a two-part question. You're in a right-to-work state. I mean, those are all right-to-work states around you, which makes it kind of tough to organize. And it's also tough on you running a union, because you got, with right-to-work, they can be in the union and not pay the dues. So I'm just wondering, looking forward here, how are you set for the future here, Jim?
Well, we've been a right to work since establishment in 1946, 47. So the battles that we've had here are very true. We typically, the members that we have, they all pay into the union because they're getting a benefit from the union. They're making a higher wage. They're making a great benefit. So they don't have a problem with that. Now, we've had some members, and I'm sure everybody has, that want to do their own thing, and that's fine. We try to talk to them, try to steer them in the right direction, but they have to do what they have to do, and we understand that. Mm-hmm. But the safety part of the biggest thing is, you know, making them understand safety, and if there is, whether they're working on a non-union site or not, if there's a life-threatening problem or an endangerment of that workforce, the union still likes to go in there and battle for those guys if they see fit, if they want us there.
Right.
But it's a struggle here, especially organizing and educating that workforce of what union is, what it stands for, and how it works. And that's the tough part here in the South, is the education piece.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Jim, I got to take a quick break here. Jim Cole joining us on our live line, business manager of Iron Workers Local 167. Website is ironworkers167.com. And in the next segment, we're going to talk about the future. I understand that Ford is building one of the largest car manufacturing plants in North America in West Tennessee. That means jobs. We'll talk about that next, back in a few minutes.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes La Una to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce is being brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at BoydWatterson.com.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining,
atomic energy, and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
This segment of America's Workforce is brought to you by Survey and Ballot Systems. SBS has been providing unions with secure and flexible election options for over 30 years. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com to learn more.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And don't forget, we're available on 6 platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and the platform known as Stitcher. And when you get an opportunity, just sign up, receive our shows on a regular basis, and give us a rating. We always like those 5-star ratings, so keep them coming. Let's go back to Jim Cole here. Jim is business manager of Iron Workers Local 167. They're based in Memphis, Tennessee, and they cover Tennessee, Arkansas, Mississippi, Missouri. I mean, 200 miles around Memphis, Tennessee. That's a big territory. And there's some work headed that way. Jim, talk to me about Ford. I guess Ford wants to build a new plant. This might be the EV, electric vehicle plant. I don't know. Maybe you could fill in some details. But what's that going to mean for the iron workers down there?
Yes, it is. It is the electric vehicle. Ford is building one of the largest manufacturing plants of vehicles in North America. That plant itself is about 3,700 acres stationed here in West Tennessee in a little town called Stanton, Tennessee. It's about 20 miles northeast of Memphis, Tennessee, but that is our jurisdiction, and we hope to man it. The plant itself is going to have probably 28 buildings at this moment. That's on phase one. It's going to have 1,000 acres under roof. That's a lot of space there, but 1,000 acres under roof. And we're in this earthquake area, so all the steel that gets put up needs to have certified welders and qualified people on it to make it last forever. And this is a game changer for West Tennessee. Hoping to see that the middle class, you know, the average income of a middle class person or an average income of West Tennessee is about $30,000. And Ford itself, as they come in, their average income is about $50,000. So this will forever change the little town of Stanton, Tennessee, that has a population of about 800 people, that it'll change to, you know, 7,000 or more, maybe 60,000 plus jobs in 10 years from now. So the little dot on the map will forever change. But the workforce here for us as iron workers, by the end of this year, I'm going to need probably 600 head of skilled crafts men and women, skilled craft people, to work this job. That's just as iron workers. We're not talking about any other skilled craftsmen or a craftswoman. They're going to need possibly 3,500 skilled craft personnel on this plant till probably the year 2025, if not longer. But there's maintenance contracts, there's all kinds of stuff. But not including, I mean, just the Ford plant here, but all across the South. You know, we've got FedEx Hub here. There's tons of other work that is going to go right beside this one. And I could possibly need, you know, 800 to 1,000 by the end of the year. So that's not, that's already putting in place the workforce I already have. I got to add to that.
Yeah.
It's a huge game changer for West Tennessee and a huge game changer for Tennessee and the surrounding area of Arkansas, Mississippi. Even in Kentucky, there's going to be people driving out of Kentucky, which is about an hour. You know, the state's real, real long, but the state's not very tall.
Right. Boy, I tell you, that's amazing. I knew the plant was going to happen down there. I had no idea of the scope of it. 28 buildings, 1,000 acres under roof. Now, you said something to me that piqued my interest. You said there was a lot of earthquakes there. Now, that I didn't know that. Tornadoes, yes. I understand tornadoes. We had the tornadoes in Kentucky that were devastating in December. But earthquakes, I'm not that familiar with. So with that being said, Jim, what do you do differently to make the plant earthquake-proof as best as you can? What's that like?
So if we follow earthquakes as a whole, we set on a pneumatic fault line, which the Mississippi, Real Foot Lake, and some other earth geographics have changed over the years because of that earthquake. We haven't had a major earthquake here in over 100 years. We're just waiting for those platelets and that fault line to shift, and eventually it's going to hit. But they consider our area a same area as like Northridge in California. You know, in 1994, that place was devastated by an earthquake. And there was buildings, and it completely changed the welding industry as a whole. They came out with new wires. They came out with new technology. They looked at heat affected zone and laminal tearing and steel. So that completely changed our industry to where anything welded in this area is under what the American Welding Society likes to call D1.8. which is a seismic zone. So when they change that, the welding test itself is much harder. It takes more time. It takes more skill. But if you're a welder, you can understand all the factors that come in play, and you can come out with a welding cert and be a certified welder and under that seismic D1.8 classification.
Well, that's amazing. Amazing the amount of work that's going to bring. Now, has that started yet, or is it still the planning stage?
So that particular site, they have started breaking ground. Again, that's 3,700 acres of farmland right now. So they have to put in the infrastructure. They have to put in the power lines, the wastewater, the drainage. Everything's got to go in. So that plan has started. They've broke ground. They're looking at possibly at the end of spring or the beginning of summer to start actually putting rebar in, putting the concrete down, and starting some steel erection. But they're going to kick it off, and there's going to be multiple contractors all putting in these 28 buildings. And we haven't even touched base with S&K, which is the battery plant that's supplying the batteries for these electric vehicles for Ford. So, again, sky's the limit. So it's forever going to change West Tennessee. But the workforce itself across the whole South is just booming. I had the pleasure of being on a call this morning with all my business managers in this district council, and looking at the scope of work for the year, everybody is in need of manpower. Need of skilled crafts, men and women, to do the work.
All right, that was my next question. I mean, it sounds like you have a challenge there. I mean, that many. I mean, 600 iron workers in the next couple of years here. How are you going to crank that out? I mean, what's the game plan? Go into the schools and say, hey, you know, I started as a welder in high school. What you got to have some kind of a strategy here, Jim.
That is correct. As I've came up through the ranks of the local union, I was under the apprenticeship training department. I was an instructor. I became the apprenticeship coordinator. I've been to schools. I've been to job fairs. I've been to, you got a lot of technical colleges now, community colleges and skilled crafts, technical colleges that are putting on a welding class, things of that nature. But what they don't teach is actually the ironwork portion of it, the steel erection, the safety, the walking of the iron, how to tie off properly, fall protection, a lot of that stuff. And that's where the apprenticeship program falls in place. But we've got multiple ways of advertising, media, social media, signs. I've got multiple, this is very unheard of, but an iron worker with a bunch of spreadsheets, a bunch of digital spreadsheets. with names and numbers and people and email blast and, you know, trying to get people engaged in communication and keep them engaged to where when that work does fire off and I'm able to put bodies on that project, that we've got the communication level there. So, And we also need that skill set too, that we have to teach and we have to groom.
Well, you got your work cut out for you. I'll tell you, the future is certainly bright over there in around Memphis, Tennessee, and Western Tennessee, especially with that Ford plant. That is a monster indeed.
Is.
Well, Jim, great interview. Thank you for joining us. And they probably told you we record this show at Local 17 of the Iron Workers. And I have to ask you a question. In your parking lot, do you have a bunch of Ford F-150s and maybe some Silverados in there? Because there's a lot of them up here in Cleveland, Ohio. I'm just wondering, is that the same case at 167?
That is the same case. a lot of Union Craft. A lot of Union Craft, a lot of American-made Thurgood boots, clothes. A little harder to find nowadays, but it can still be found. But yeah, a lot of pride there.
Yeah, yeah. And down the road, those F-150s are going to be electric vehicles, and they're going to come out of Tennessee. Got to love that. I love it.
Yep.
All right,
yep.
My friend, you take care. Let's stay in touch on this issue. We have a national audience here on six different platforms, as you heard at the beginning. And hopefully, you know, they're going to get the message that things are happening over there in Western Tennessee, and they might want to go down there and find their way to the middle class. How's that sound?
I would love it. I would love to be a part of teaching a man or woman to fish.
There you go, buddy. Take care. Stay in touch and stay safe. Okay, brother?
All right. Thank you.
Now, there's a guy who's excited about the future. Again, that was James Cole, business manager of Iron Workers Local 167, based in Memphis, Tennessee. Website is ironworkers167.com. We'll definitely keep in touch with him. All right, we're going to break. Mike Pope is with IATSE, the stagehands out of Indianapolis. IATSE Local 317 coming up next.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as health care and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.
We're the nurses, firefighters, and claims representatives that help keep our government services running. We respond to natural disasters. We care for our nation's veterans, and we investigate discrimination in the workplace. We are federal and D.C. government workers, and we are proud to serve the American people. Working in more than 70 agencies across the government, we know we can fulfill our mission because our union has our back. Learn more at AFGE.org. Paid for by the American Federation of Government Employees, AFL-CIO.
The United Auto Workers are one of the largest and most diverse unions in North America, with members in virtually every sector of the economy. Learn more about this proud sponsor of our program at UAW.org.
Union members need to be heard. Reliable and convenient union voting has never been more important than it is now.
Make voting easy for your membership by working with Survey and Ballot Systems. SBS offers encrypted and monitored solutions that ensure your elections are accurate and accessible for every member through mail-in, online, and in-person voting. Visit SurveyandBallotSystems.com and take the next step in getting secure and auditable elections.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle is at AWF Union Podcast, AWF Union Podcast. Let's go to line number two, and joining us from Indianapolis is Mike Pope. And Mike Pope comes to us from IATSE, that's the Stagehands Union, Local 317. That's IATSE, Local317.com. Hey, Mike, welcome to America's Workforce. How are we doing today, brother?
Well, we're doing very well. Thank you for having me on the show.
It is my pleasure, and I'll tell you, we're talking off the air. I learned a lot here because this local is kind of new, and I was reading your bio earlier. Now, you got into broadcast TV back in 1979, and this was not union, and you worked a big chunk of your career until, what was it, 2015, when you decided to start Local 317. Talk to me about that, Mike.
Well, honestly, I think one of the biggest mistakes that freelancers in the broadcast industry have made is not being union organized. I think in the 90s, which is kind of a golden era of freelance television, people were kind of fat and happy and not thinking about the future. And being organized and bargaining in our market in particular has been a real boon for benefits. That means health care. That means a retirement annuity. That means a retirement pension. Very few people offer pensions anymore, but IATSE will do that. And I'm so grateful that we've organized, not just for the monetary side of it, in other words, what you're getting paid, and the protection that the union and the help that the union can get you, but the benefits in our market has been a huge, huge thing.
And they helped you out during the pandemic, didn't they?
They sure did. I think this is very underreported, but, you know, IATSE got hit really, really hard by the COVID. And broadcasts recovered quicker than, say, the stagehands, the guys doing the conventions and the shows and all the TV and movies. But regardless of your ability to pay, IATSE stepped in and covered your health insurance. If you were getting your health insurance through IATSE, which many of those people do, they paid for those premiums for over a year. Now, that to me is a union really standing up for its members. And that's one of the reasons our market went with IATSE, because they work so hard for the members.
Well, it was not easy getting 317 together. Why don't you walk us through that process? Because we got a lot of listeners coast to coast. We're on six platforms now. They may be thinking of starting a union. You know, there's a lot of people that are quitting their jobs. We got this great resignation going on, and there's look at what's going on in Starbucks. I mean, it's happening all around the country. But why don't you tell us how that panned out for you? Because it certainly didn't happen overnight. So, Mike, tell us that story.
Well, certainly organizing a local union is a lot of work, and we had a core group of people that were committed to doing that. We took meetings with IATSE and NABIT and IBW. And the main reason we went with IATSE was they promised us absolutely nothing except to work hard for us. And we've certainly seen that in our local. I've seen that internationally as well. And I think one of the key things about organizing is you have to have a good group of people that are willing to do the work and spread the message. And that is so important to bring as many people as you can into this process and get them involved, understand what needs to be done. For the average member, besides paying dues and contributing, showing up at meetings, for example, most of the work of the union locally falls on the officers. But the benefits of being local, like I said, literally benefits, and it gets you protection. As far as organizing, you just have to be patient, and you have to be a good communicator and let people know the process. It takes so much longer you know, it's not like getting an oil change on your car. You make an appointment and off you go. It takes months. It almost took us a full year by the time we got the cards, got the vote, and then started the contract, and then get the Constitution, do the elections. But the payoff, I think, is really worth it. And I wish we'd organized 20, 30 years ago. It's to me, there's no real downside to being in a union. It's all pretty much upside.
Mike, I have to ask you, you've been in the broadcast industry for 40 years. Don't get me wrong here. What took you so long to go union? That's my question.
You know, I think people just kind of got lazy with the money that they were making. And when you're young, you're not necessarily thinking about the future. You may not have a family. I won't say people are selfish, but they're just not, you know, not thinking outside their own little box. And I think also you need role models. You need examples. And with, you know, the broadcast industry as a whole not being organized, people didn't really have a good example to be organized, to see what it can bring to the table. So I think that's what took so long. And like I said, I wish we'd done it, you know, 20 years ago. I wish I'd done it when I went, you know, freelance in 89. I wish we all were organized, because I look at what people could have had in their annuities, how their pension could have been better, the money that they could have saved on health care. Not to mention there's a whole raft of other protections that are in a lot of contracts, how the overtime is generated. You know what your rates are going to be. You don't have to generally go through a big negotiation dance every year. So
yeah.
I would strongly urge the people in broadcast, if you want to organize, please contact us at IOTC, and we have people. It's IOTC, I think, is one of the broadcasts, even though they're a fairly small slice of IOTC compared to their entertainment and stagehands, they've actually had some good growth, adding chapters and adding members, because more people in broadcasting are realizing the advantage of being in a union.
You know, it's interesting, your union, because I learned a lot. You know, they almost had the walkout in Hollywood a couple of months back, and I didn't realize how many different chapters there were and different job descriptions there are.
Correct.
For IOTC members. I think I counted like over 300, something like that. It's
yes,
really
the
amazing.
The entertainment side of it is off the chart. I actually went to an international convention a few years ago, and it was very eye-opening for us to go. We thought we realized how big IOTC was, but going to the convention was very eye-opening, and seeing all those different trade crafts. Broadcasts, we tend to group our crafts are all in one local union, whereas entertainment, they tend to separate those out. It's what works best for them because of the scale of the people. Our local is not that big compared to a lot of other locals.
How many people do you have in your local 317?
We're about 90 right now. It's been down slightly. Certainly what's been going on the last 2 years, we've had people that have dropped out of the workforce as well for various reasons. You know, we've had some people retire because they were just, at that age, and they didn't want to deal with all this anymore. Some people, unfortunately, did not want to get vaccinated. And in our business, you almost have to be vaccinated first. I say probably 80 to 90% of the jobs out there, you have to show proof of vaccination.
Yeah, I don't get that pushback, but hey, you know, to each his own.
I really don't either. I don't either.
I know. So what was your peak? You're at 90 now. How many did you
have? We were probably a little closer to 100 right after we organized. You know, there's a kind of a rush, and we have a couple people that it doesn't sound like much, but it is in our market that are probably going to be joining as well. We're trying to get some more younger membership. Indiana, unfortunately, is a right-to-work state, so you do not have to belong in the union to work, to get on the referral list. But most of the full-time people see the benefit of the union, and they want to support the union regardless of whether or not you have to join. So
yeah.
I'm obviously not a fan of right to work, because I feel people that are in the union get the benefits of all the negotiations and the work we do without having to pay a real cost for that. And I think also they miss out on some of the networking that goes on and the ability to influence our decisions and how we help them.
Is anybody trying to change that, the right to work? In Ohio here, there's always a couple of people downstate that say, hey, we got to go right to work because Indiana's right to work. West Virginia's right to work. And, you know, all the surrounding states. Michigan went right to work. So did Wisconsin. But I'm wondering, they had an opportunity in Virginia to turn it around, but they did not seize that opportunity. And now it's over because they got an all red legislature over there. But what about Indiana? Is anybody speaking out about that?
Nothing what I would call concrete. I think, again, this whole COVID thing has kind of put a lot of that kind of stuff on the back burner. I know it's been talked about, but there's nothing that I'm aware of that's really concrete going on.
So what's the future here? I mean, we're hoping and praying that we're going to get out of this pandemic. I'm hearing a couple of stories that this variant might peak in the next week, because as quick as it's gone up, it may go down just as fast. I'm hoping that's going to be the case. But eventually, there's going to be a normal that's happening here, and it's going to be an opportunity for you to kind of perhaps spread your wings, get some more members. What's the game plan, Mike?
Yeah, I think I know IATSE never really stopped trying to organize in the broadcast. They've got a couple cities that they're looking at. We've got a couple clients, perhaps, that we might organize. Certainly, these restrictions with meeting, you know, and wearing masks and, you know, gathering large groups of people. We've gone to, in some cases, you know, we're doing Zoom meetings for our meetings, our board meetings. We're really trying to be cognizant of that fact. But all that makes it harder to organize because you can't, it's just more difficult to do face to face. And I personally think talking to someone about unionism is much better than trying to even call them, or certainly emails are almost really useless, really, in my opinion. So I think the future's still bright for IATSE, and I know they've actually, I think they just got a new chapter down in Miami last year, and I'm looking forward to helping IATSE out in any way possible, and we're looking forward to getting a few more members in. TV technically is changing. TV is a it's all about technology and TV. So in some ways, there's less crew people needed now because of the way they do some of the remote engineering stuff. But there's still jobs that have to be done, and there's still a little bit of growth there, I think.
Yeah, I was surprised, and this goes years back when they made cameras robotic. And I said, no, you got to have a person behind that camera, especially when they're doing newscasts. But that's the technology that you referred to, and that's not going to change. It's just going to...
No, it's not. You'll probably see a slight reduction, too. You know, nowadays, there's a fair amount of sports that's been done, what they call remote engineering, where they may have the graphics team and the tape playback teams are actually in a central location. And then the camera people are on site getting you those pictures back. And robos are done certainly for a cost saving, but also you can get those robo cameras in places that man cameras simply can't get to, or say, for example, in auto racing, aren't safe to have a manned operator there. So there's a lot of reasons for these robo cams, but the remote side of it, where you're having less people on site, is definitely a trend that's here to stay. But at the same time, it seems like there's more sports that are being covered. So we're hoping it'll kind of even out, but, you know, you just don't know. If you can't, TV is all about change. If you can't keep up with the change, then you're probably going to get a little left behind. So we're all just adapting as best we can.
I hear you, brother. Mike Pope joining us on our live line, president of IATSE Local 317 out of Indianapolis. The website is IATSELocal317.com. You take care, stay safe, and congratulations on starting that union over there and moving forward, okay?
Well, thank you so much, Ed, for having me on the show, and you stay safe out there, too.
That's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Coming up tomorrow, we have the UAW and the Cement Masons joining us. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening. And be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.